We've been doing some demos recently with our, MCP layer, where you can be like, oh, here's my portfolio. Here's what's happened. Now get me some news stories.
Yeah.
That exact join, as long as you're getting roughly in the area, you don't need it to be the Goldman Sachs paper on my name on that day. Like, the more where the thematic close enough is good enough, I think is where the stuff is very strong. The other side of this, which, I think it's getting better at, but it will give you an answer in all cases, a probabilistic answer, even if that answer is not a particularly good one.
Hey, and welcome to the Momentum Podcast, the show where fintech meets AI. I'm your host, Stan Altshuler, investor, founder, and advisor to some of the world's top hedge funds, asset managers, and data companies. Each week, we'll dive into practical AI strategies to help you cut through the noise, beat data overload, build smarter workflows, and turn your ideas into results. We'll explore everything from AI tools for your daily workflows to building data-driven growth engines for your organizations. Here, you'll discover what's next in finance and how to stay ahead of the curve with AI. Let's dive in. All right. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Momentum Podcast. We've got two great guests on today. It's Dean Schaefer and Danny Diaz from Lifekeeper. And gentlemen, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us today. Why don't you take a few minutes and give us very brief backgrounds about yourselves, maybe a little bit of background, a little bit of what you're doing now.
Great. Thanks, Dan. And thank you so much for having us on this podcast. We're very excited to be here. My name is Dean Schaefer. I'm the CEO of Lightkeeper. I joined Lightkeeper about a year ago and to partner with Danny and the rest of the team here. So just a little bit about Lightkeeper. Lightkeeper, we're a data analytics and reporting firm and platform. We have been around for over 15 years. We provide really portfolio intelligence and analytics to the investment management community. That is both hedge fund and asset management firms, and really help to try and provide analytical insights to their data so they can actively manage their business. And we provide that through over 450 different statistics. We take over 90 different data sources. And then what we do is provide insights and really a view into that data, depending on the seat that you sit in within the investment management community. So be it IR, be it your CFO, COO, risk, PM, you name it, you're all looking at the same data with a different lens. And we try to provide that lens so they can be more intelligent and actively manage their business. And
good, good introduction. And Danny, would you put everything you do into this one kind of category called portfolio intelligence? Do you call it that still? And then also, Danny, just a few words about yourself as well. I know you were the co-founder, right?
Co-founder. I'm currently the chief product officer. Just a little bit of background, I guess. Prior to that, I was the founder of a company called Tamale Software, called Tamale Software. That kind of helped kick off the research management space. And before that, I worked at a hedge fund and was actually a credit derivatives trader for a little bit as well. So a little background of both in the buy side, sell side, and a decent amount of time in fintech. Portfolio intelligence is still a label that we are really categorizing this space. It's actually been somewhat interesting because, when we first started out, the vast majority of people were just looking at the warehouse, meaning like, how do we actually collect all our data, not necessarily trying to drive the intelligence layer, the computation and elements on top of it. I think that term has been collectively adopted by a lot of folks. It's starting to get a little more buzz of saying like, oh, it's a portfolio intelligence, PI, which is a layer on top. I think one thing that we also do, which is a little different, and I think is still important in the industry, is this idea of how you actually collect that raw data source. So that IBOR concept of, like, many people have an accounting system, an accounting book of records or an ABOR, but most of that data needs to be migrated into something for insights, which is some people are calling IBOR technology. Other people are doing different things. It kind of depends on what part of the ecosystem. I'm sure we'll kind of dive into it. It's a pretty diverse space. It's I think a lot of different touch points, especially with a lot of the movement we're seeing in AI. I think it's going to continue to get focused.
That's great. This has got a great background, gents. Thank you. So I want to dive in because I'm sure that a lot of our listeners and viewers have kind of these similar questions, especially with the pace of innovation, everything that's going on right now, and these big questions thrown around, is software dead, things like that. You've started this business 15 years ago, and Dean, you've been in this business for a long time as well. Obviously, the problems that you were solving back then are not exactly the same as they are right now. Can you tell us what are
people still struggling with today? What are the major challenges that investment managers face? What are the sticky ones, right? Like, what are the sticky ones that maybe AI has helped on the fringes here and there, like as a chat, but it's really not solved the fundamental issues? Is there anything like that that you could point to?
Yeah, I will answer this more on a higher level basis. And then Danny, you can talk specifically if you'd like on the on what we're seeing in our clients. But fundamentally, I believe that there's more data than ever before, and there's been more requests for answers from that data than ever before. So structures are more complicated. LP requests are more complicated. PMs are asking the back and middle office for more analysis than ever before. And you put all that together, and yes, it creates an exponential challenge that everyone's been dealing with. So my fundamental belief is that technology is the only way that you can solve those issues as it continues to grow, as there's more data, as there's more funds, as there's more LPs. You need to leverage technology to do that. And so we've seen that challenge continue, and we've actually seen it within our client base as well. You know, our clients are getting more requests from their investors. They are getting more reporting requirements internally and externally, and they need tools to do that. And Excel just can't do that, right? Mm-hmm. Excel has a limitation, and it's both a functional limitation and a time limitation, meaning time, like you can spend days trying to answer something, but it's just not an efficient use of your time. And so from a fundamental market and high level perspective, there's just those tailwinds in the industry that we don't see going away.
And if you talk to any hedge fund manager, anyone at all, really, they all will tell you, oh, sure, we use AI. I mean, that is the kind of like the universal, right? It's the way you use it, right? And for some reason, what you're saying, and Danny, we had this chat right before you jumped on, but this prevalent use of Excel spreadsheets with the links and the errors and all that, even with the use of AI, for some reason, that is not going away. Can we dig into that? Like, what are the questions that this technology still can't answer that people still have to manage these hundreds of interlinking Excel spreadsheets just to answer like LP demands?
Well, I think there are a couple of different points in there, which is, you know, we actually love Excel for a lot of good things. The thing is, Excel is so versatile. They sometimes call it the Swiss Army knife of finance. Yes. It can be used as your storage layer. It can be used as your computation layer. And it can be used as your presentation layer.
Yeah.
The one that we really push back on the most is like presentation layer. Sure. Like take data into Excel, format as you want. But computation, it becomes per spreadsheet. Like by definition, you're basically spreading out your IP into each individual sheet. Like how you compute an IRR is going to vary if you got the right cells. And then the data side. I think a lot of this is that sort of question as people are building businesses, especially in the alternative space where they start with less people, what sort of infrastructure is the baseline necessary? And I think kind of the joke is most people try to start with the minimum spend possible. And then they, as they grow, they understand they need to do more in order to help their business grow. They stop being that person who was once an analyst who became a PM who's now a CEO of a big business. And how do you actually put the infrastructure so your entire team succeeds? These data sets, especially ones we work on against the portfolio, really cut across the organization from like the risk view to the IR team trying to talk about your strategy to the investment team trying to drive alpha. And I think a lot of it is the kind of how the ecosystem of the backdrop evolved, which is you're kind of expecting in many cases an accounting company to become your analytics company. And they're not normally the same thing. Like the job of an accounting company is to get your NAV right. That's really what you're paying your administrator for. Right. And everything beyond that's kind of nice to have. Meaning if you have some corporate action or something that's funky, they're like, if I got the cash right and I'm paying people out correctly and I have it all booked and I can follow, you know, the ledger, we're in good shape. But you're looking at it, well, I need it to reflect my strategy. So if I have options, they need to be on the right direction. I need to merge things. My cash holdings really aren't something I look at consistently. So all of that was traditionally pushed into an Excel manual layer. And we really have looked to automate and provide a lot more tools around that. And I think it's going to continue to push that direction because most of the strategies are also getting more complicated.
Super interesting. And Dean, do you have anything to add to that? Like just to talk about what you're seeing from clients?
I think the same continues, which is probably meaning like the challenge is the same. It's normally a data collection set. It's normally the insight set. I think we're actually really in the early innings of AI adoption into the kind of investment landscape. Number one, you have a lot of compliance restrictions, which cause people to move a little slowly. Also, I think it's hard to really kind of fathom how fast some of this space is moving. I think in the last, since August, we've had 6 major model releases. MCP, which is something that we're supporting, called Model Context Protocol, which is allowing for introduction of kind of secondary sets into LLMs, secondary data sets. They finally hit 10,000. You know, basically, they went from zero to 10,000 different providers in under a 9-month stretch. I mean, these are all very fast curves across the ecosystem. I think some of the things that people are still trying to understand how to best integrate it, that's one of the things we're really excited about by having such a great client base, is, you know, being able to partner with them on their exact needs and what they're ready to use and where they're looking to have it be somewhat independent. But I do think it is a bit of a call to action around people's data sets, because what's a little different in my mind, if you kind of think of, you know, like the Tableaus, you've seen different sort of iterations of like how these things advance, you know, early data warehouses, then data visualization layers, then things like Databricks, which is kind of connecting the end to end. What AI is promising in some ways is the opportunity to automate some of that second part reasoning on actually looking at all the information. We're really excited about that, because I mean, we have 400 statistics in our system. And, you know, in many cases, the concept is, how do I synthesize all this in a kind of easy way? So AI is now saying that maybe you actually can't just have your data available to you, but that data connects into insight layers, which really start reducing your cost. I think there's a lot of things that you're going to see over the next year as people start to put these systems to work. But I think we're in the early innings of the quote wins. I mean, a lot of that's because, you know, you see, like, in terms of customer support, you know, IR people are still answering the phone. That's not quite the problem of our client base. Data wrangling remains a challenge. I think there's some opportunity there, but a lot of that remains to be seen. I know you've got other guests on talking the research space. I think research is probably the one that's been really pushing the hardest, because it is, you know, it is qualitative, not quantitative, which really falls into that strength.
Of, I mean, people want to ask questions of their data, right? They just want to ask questions and get reasonable answers. And AI, I think, is quite good at that, right? Especially now with the Claude's push really into skills, I think changed this paradigm for a lot of people. Now they understand, oh, wow, I can really tap into some of these tools that I know and love and use, but I can just have this AI layer where I can interact with it as a human being without putting in a lot of work, like fairly low cost.
And I think that's right. I just want to echo what Danny was saying, that I do think we're still in the early stages. You said earlier, Stan, that if you ask all the hedge fund managers, everyone would say they're using AI, but they're still using it. But I'm not sure how much they're all using it. I think there are a lot of them are in the evaluation stage of it and starting to put their toe in the water. And I think we're now in the execution stage of that. And over the next several months, people are now starting to make decisions about, how do I have that in my workflow and how do I leverage and utilize that?
Well, for the most part, it's not in their workflow yet. They're using it kind of like as a chat bot, really, as a friendly chat bot. They upload. It's very isolated, and we're not even scratching the surface of what it can really do, which is the point. Like, you know, there's a lot more. It's a whole intelligence layer, all sort of data, alternative data, your portfolio and risk data, your third-party data, your market data. It could just do a lot more. And when they say I'm using AI, it's not really what they mean, right?
Yeah. And I think people are very much open to it and trying to learn about it. But this is not a first mover industry, if you compare it against a lot of other industries. I think they're using it in some capacity. And there's a lot of opportunity for us to continue to implement it in everyone's firms and use cases, or for the managers to use it. It's why we're so excited. We've rolled out, as Danny said, we've rolled out our MCP layer, which is leveraging the MCP layer to access our data, but also be able to wrap it with other information that you can get through Claude or ChatGPT. And so you have those multiple data sources that you can bring together that just make everyone's data a lot more valuable. And I think over, as we see that playing out forward as well, and we can talk to you about our MCP experience as well, we think people will be adopting those type of tools more and more as in the coming months.
Sure. And have you, like, in terms of the use cases, you don't have to get too much in the weeds here and get too specific, but obviously even the use cases have changed, right? Before, like, you look 10 years ago, the stuff that LPs asked for hedge funds, hey, what's your exposure and performance and basic like geographical exposure? Or maybe what's your attribution from your top 5 longs, whatever. It was basic. That's getting much more sophisticated. And at the same time, the managers are asking a lot more difficult and challenging questions from their own data that they weren't able to ask before. Can you point to anything specific? Like, what are the specific things that are actually changing? Are LPs asking for a lot more? Maybe attribution and risk analytics are something that's a lot harder for managers to provide. And then what about the managers? What are the use cases? How is that evolving? What's the light bulb moment that's, aha, like this is possible now? Oh, I want to demand that for my data, my analytics.
I think there are a couple of axes you're all hitting on, which is like, you know, how much is it internally driven? How much is this externally driven? I think driven by both. A lot of that is, I think, kind of a new wave of managers who are getting very data centric in their approach versus more of kind of an older school, like I read and pick stocks. And there's still both are in the mix. But like, if even if they're not necessarily looking at their book through a heavy quantitative lens, the outside world is. And I kind of have this common joke where, you know, probably in the early 2000s, the alternative asset management community was posting sort of returns, et cetera, where their entire relationship with their client could just be on a top level P&L performance number, because it was impressive enough on its own that everyone's like, I don't need to call you. I see that number and there's no further questions.
Right.
I think that's got getting harder and harder to come by. And in many cases, the managers themselves, the outside investors are getting sophisticated. And they're like, I need you to do a particular role for me. Like you need to fit this particular part of my overall investment strategy, which is a little different than just hit a top level number. I need you to be kind of a biotech firm that gives me the upside and good biotech years, but just not too much downside. But I need you to stay that focus, because that's what I'm expecting you to do. And I have a very sophisticated benchmarking structure. So let's talk about it so we can understand we're aligned. So I also think internally people are trying to dig into more ways to be better. And ultimately a lot of those tools are becoming more available, and, you know, through like firms like ourselves and others who are trying to definitely try to push the envelope a bit about what you can discover. I will say that, like, when you're talking about this kind of like this progression points, there's still that overall thing. You can't automate what's not there, right? You can't leverage what's not there. In many cases, these firms are very data light, meaning they have a shared drive, they have an inbox, they have some things like that. But pointing AI at a very large collection of data is A, token expensive, but B, going to get recomputed each time. I think the art form
and
over
it's
the
in
next
silos list, too, right? Different strategies, different analysts have their own models. One model is different from the other guy's model, and one could be super deep, another one could be super broad, right? That's not really great for AI to go in and make sense out of all of that.
I think we're going to be in an era of a lot of, like, it's a word that's going to be tossed around more and more is probably ontologies, which is like, how do you actually organize this data with links so that we understand how it can actually be consumed? And the question of what do you need a deterministic, meaning a absolutely guaranteed data join versus a non-deterministic join? Meaning like, I'm happy to be close in some ways. And that's what I kind of see AI being very powerful is the non-deterministic join. We've been doing some demos recently with our, you know, MCP layer where you can be like, oh, here's my portfolio, here's what's happened. Now get me some news stories.
Yeah.
That exact join, as long as you're getting roughly in the area, you don't need it to be the Goldman Sachs paper on my name on that day. Like the more where the thematic close enough is good enough, I think is where the stuff is very strong. The other side of this, which, you know, I think it's getting better at, but it will give you an answer in all cases, a probabilistic answer, even if that answer is not a particularly good one. And so I think in this industry, especially, that's going to be something the entire community is going to have to work very hard at to understand how we not only work in our own silos, but support other silos, because a lot of our investors invest in fairly complicated security sets. I mean, just look at the, you know, ticker history of something like Liberty Media of like, what did you mean by that? Like, you know, at what era were you looking at Liberty or Paramount or Discovery or, you know, Fox through three different mergers, and tell me what you expect? It ends up being somewhat complicated.
Yeah.
And also just to then to build off of that on the deterministic side, you know, we live in an industry that being almost right on data is not okay, right? You need to be 100% accurate on the deterministic data to show that this is the information, this is how you performed, and this is the results of that data query. And so what we were talking about earlier, you know, the proverbial garbage in, garbage out, AI is not going to solve a bad data set. So you have to have good data to be able to leverage the AI tools if you want those deterministic answers in the way that people need them.
Yeah, super interesting. So the one thing that hasn't changed, right, in this industry for as long as I've been in it, is we see this dynamic that LPs are just much more comfortable allocating to larger funds, right? Most of the flows, you see the different numbers, but like 80% of the new flows go to like the top 200 funds, which is, you know, a tiny portion by number, massive by AUM. Do you see this pivotal moment in technology where smaller funds can adopt the same model, just as high quality as like the Two Sigmas or the 0.72s or some of the biggest funds, the Bridgewaters of the world. Do you see this as maybe like a pivotal inflection point where, boy, you know, the funds that really have their data together, right, really understand how to apply MCPs or maybe tools such as Lightkeeper across all their data and really understand how to ask the right questions, can this democratize the process? Meaning, can they become really, really competitive because of that technology versus somebody who's just much larger in size and resources and all that stuff, right? They still got the same OpenAI, Claude, right? They still got the same model, right? Does that happen?
I'd love to say that's true. I think in some cases it makes the baseline a lot harder. Meaning, you like if they are all going to be able to invest in this sort of infrastructure where you can have GPU cycles providing insights against your process, you need to be able to be in that same category in order to be compete. Like, I don't think it becomes a renaissance necessarily. I think it becomes more of a, if you aren't innovative as a small fund, I think it kind of gets harder because they will invest in this at scale and they'll have the ability to kind of put large IT teams and other things to make sure those tools are available. There is a growing ecosystem of commercial vendors like that are out there trying to help people across the board. And we work with very large funds and many of these other commercial vendors do as well, meaning there is that sort of thing where people do get access to what the biggest and best are using. But I kind of think this, the table stakes are growing as the tools continue to get better. And so I think you have to kind of add that to your mix of, are we at a technological / information disadvantage as a young company against our more mature, more well-funded peers? But a lot of these things, I do think flip side is the costs keep coming down. I mean, one of the things was really impressive when we were first working with AI tools. So in order to get MCP access through the early Anthropic stuff through Claude, you need to buy an enterprise system that required a minimum of 20 seats, which really would cost you about, at that time, $70,000 a year. So pretty much cost prohibitive early part of last year. It has since come down to being, you need a team seat of 5 users for $30 a month. So, I mean, it's like we just shifted from something that, exactly. And so I think there is a tool set where things are starting to come much more to the overall fund space. What I will say is if you adopt these tools, especially as you're a growing fund, you could be substantially leaner and meaner than someone who's already working against the old paradigms.
Yeah, you can't close the gap without them. It's not guaranteeing you're going to close the gap with them only because everyone else is investing in this as well. But it, to Danny's point, it does become table stakes. But what I will tell you, if you don't compare it against the big boys today, but you compare it against the other smaller firms earlier, what these tools do allow you to do is tell your story better, be more responsive, punch above your weight in terms of how you interact with prospective and current LPs.
Yes.
And so that's what makes it table stakes in order for you to be able to be out there in the marketplace. So there's a lot of value across the size of fund and the life cycle of a prospective fund.
And that's what I'm kind of hoping, right? Because like the large funds could tell the investors, here's like my correlations and my R squares and all my exposures to 100 factor model. And we have a whole risk team and look at this risk person and that. And then the smaller ones, well, we're factor aware, right? But with AI, can't you like get closer to leveling that you can ask the same questions, I feel, if you just have your data and all your ducks in a row, if you just have your data together. So that I really appreciate both sides of that argument. Definitely remains to be seen. But if you don't mind, if we jump into the realm of hypothetical for just a second, and you know that there's a big scare this last week and to this week as well when Claude came out with the skills, you know, is software kind of dead? And what about SaaS and all that? We're just going to have agents talk to the data directly. What about if you take that further and look at the whole asset management space, if you humor me for a second, right? If you build the MCPs and you've got the data and you put a very smart AI agent on top of that, is not emotional, that doesn't really make sizing mistakes. Everything is calculated and according to like the formulas that have been written already and published, right? Is the asset management itself, can AI just do it with just use Lightkeeper, use whatever, use Barra for risk, just like let AI agents consume all the alternative data and get all that and maybe outperform humans, right? Without any emotion. Do you see that happening or not really? Like, I mean, LPs are-
I mean, it's out there, but I mean, they've quantitative investing. This is not new. I would just make that comment that like, this is not a new threat per se. I would say if there's any space that's already seen a quant revolution, especially in factor space, it would be our own. And it hasn't necessarily taken over completely, but it's been a very fast growing segment, especially where they've been using those factor models, multi-manager model, like high leverage, independent alpha. And that's actually still continuing to probably gain the majority of the asset allocation, but not all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at like a wealth front and other components, I think you'd have to ask yourself, is the AI going to add a customer service layer that's somehow completely transformative? Like, why is Wealthfront not bigger than Charles Schwab? But I kind of think there's an element, and I think this is something we'll keep following in AI, is like, people still want to talk to people. Like, yes. I think there's some elements of that part of the business. I think the, you know, other piece, if you talk about the SaaS apocalypse and, you know, probably running apocalypse all the way down to logistics companies where everyone's like, AI can do all of that. You know, if you've kind of spent more time, when we've been spending more time in the space, it felt like it was a knee-jerk reaction to old news in some ways of like how far these models have come and continue to go to kind of progress. I think there is that question around that idea of moats for software companies of like, what is, I think people are forgetting that this, the price went down, but they were also valued very highly. Meaning like that maybe some of this is more of a reevaluation of maybe your moat's not a guarantee that I can trade you 40 times earnings because
maybe it's like not forever, right? There's
some, not for, right. Or you have to spend a lot more money because you're going to have to rethink things. But I think there are ways to look at this, but I think it is causing questions into the various things, probably for all businesses, to ask themselves, where is this a value add to my business and where is it a potential challenge in terms of, and you mentioned that for smaller companies, it's both a challenge to other people using it, but it's also an opportunity. The ability to ask a question, like of risk models. I mean, sometimes people have a lot of trouble understanding elements around factor risk. You can have a model walk you through it, talk you through it, break it down, try to help you get to understanding where previously you'd have to be working with a vendor counterparty or other things. So I think there is a great democratization.
And they're going to make it seem much more complicated than it really is, right? And the AI is just going to explain it like you're five, which is like one of my favorite use cases.
I mean, this is just a lot more betas than you had before. Like you understand the market beta. Now let's break it into 27 and then tell me what more you get from that and why should you care? I think there's a chance. I mean, I just think that there is also a component where in all cases, you're going to still have to explain it back to a person at some point in time. Like we're going to go into model space, then we're going to have to back out of model space. The way I kind of joke about that is, you know, imagine the scenario where everyone writes their really short sentence email and send it to ChatGPT to be like, I'm writing Stan an email. I really want to say these five words. Break it out into a bigger email. And you get so annoyed that you're kind of like, I'm getting too many emails. Summarize this email. And ultimately,
shrink it.
And it's just like, why don't you send me the five set? You didn't want me to write me a, like the thing of like, hey, Stan, I can't make it. You have this long thing and you're like, I can't make it.
Right.
So I think there's some of that compression in and out of the space that we're going to have to keep looking at and trying to understand where it can go. Just last piece in there, which is a lot of these things that people are talking about are long running processes. And I think these things might be able to build software for folks, but building the software, maintaining the software and kind of owning it through time is the thing that's going to be much different in my mind as they try to figure it out, because that's different than just, that's kind of the difference between the thing that works today versus the thing that tries to work every day. And so we'll see how it continues to progress, but it's a lot of things like, I'm sure some people have this experience, like Nano Banana or anything else where you're like, generate an image. The first image looks pretty good. And then if you're like, well, I don't quite like that, change it a little bit. Mm. Then you're on this like entire process of like, you can't quite get there.
Yes.
So
you can get 80% of the way there, but that last step,
20%, it just may never happen, right? And so I think maybe those are some of the things we'll see as they get better. I think it's exciting to see where it's going to go. I can understand why people are concerned, but I also think people should recognize it's a double-edged sword. There's also a lot of opportunity for your businesses to get, or businesses in general, to get better with this technology in addition to the people who might lose out on their previous moats.
This is great. As we're coming up on time here, can you talk a little bit about kind of like the perfect ideal client? What do they look like? What are the problems they're trying to solve? And how Lightkeeper fits in? This is kind of like if you had loud speakerphone and you could tell the whole industry, hey, here's what we do and the folks that we can help the most. Would you mind doing that?
I would start by saying, you know, every prospective client that we have and people that we work with is a little bit of a snowflake, right? So everyone is dealing with different issues that we're trying to help solve. And so we have clients that are just starting out as emerging managers, and we have $60 billion plus firms that are managing money. And all of them are trying to manage their data to get insights into that information to better manage their firm and get better data points to be able to make decisions to move forward and move forward and efficiently. So those are the types of clients that are looking for other tools other than what they have in front of them, which is generally Excel or some patchwork tooling and one place to get all that access and insights. And then Lightkeeper is able to overlay all that data and provide you those insights. And what I would say is we also wrap that around with service that you are then able to get access and insights to the entire Lightkeeper team. You know, we kind of talk about Lightkeeper as almost being crowdsourced over the last 15 years. And we talk to our clients a lot. And with our large client base, we're then able to take best practices from each of those clients. And our service team are then able to give those insights about how to better manage and utilize that data. So for anyone who's looking to try to get better utilize their data and try to manage their firm, those are people we'd love to talk with. Danny, I don't know if you would categorize it any
different. No, I we're a data analytics company. People who care about data and help to drive decisions via data, we really try to enable that. We cover a very broad breadth of statistics, like from all the way from talking about your IR team telling a better story to your traders looking at trade costs to financing to a lot of different things. So I think that the main piece is if you believe data drives your business, that's our passion. And one of the things we've been fortunate to have a lot of great clients kind of help us fine tune the tools that we have out of the box.
And from my point, I have, when I spent a little bit of time at Barclays, I was on the consulting team. I had a chance to speak with a ton of hedge funds. They had hundreds of hedge fund clients. And I will say hedge funds absolutely love you guys. Their eyes light up, like the IR folks. They basically say you make answering complicated questions easier, and it's like the best thing. But also even the PMs, there's insights that they would get out of Lightkeeper that they can't get out of Excel, and no matter what they do, and it's just easier. So kudos to you guys. Your clients love you. You have definitely built something very, very special, and I love the way you think about the world. And thank you for helping us unpack all these changes and helping our listeners make sense out of some of this. Where could our listeners find you? Like, where do they go and learn more about Lightkeeper? You tell me, and I'll put that in the description.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you very much for saying those kind words. We're very appreciative and proud of our reputation and relationship with our clients. If people want to learn more, they can go to our website, lightkeeper.com, as well as the Lightkeeper LinkedIn page, or try to connect with me or any of the other Lightkeeper members on LinkedIn. But we're not hard to find, and we'd love to chat with anyone on these subjects.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us on the Momentum Podcast. Thank you once again. All the best to you, and take care.
And thanks so much.
We appreciate it. Great.
Thanks for tuning into Momentum. If you found today's episode valuable, don't forget to follow the show and share it with your network. This helps us a lot. To explore how AI can help your firm, visit acadia.im. I'm Stan Altshuler, and I'll see you next week with more practical insights to help turn data into growth and decisions into results with the help of AI.